Hare he sahana bhavatu sahana bhunaktu sahaveyantaravavahai tejasvinavadhidhamastu Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Chapter 11 The Dream Come True Srila Prabhupada. I planned that I must go to America. Generally, they go to London, but I did not want to go to London. I was simply thinking how to go to New York. I was scheming whether I should go this way through Tokyo, Japan, or that way. Which way is cheaper? That was my proposal. And I was targeting to New York always. Sometimes I was dreaming that I have come to New York. Writing was only half the battle. The other half was publishing. Both Bhaktivedanta Swami and his spiritual master wanted to see Srimad Bhagavatam printed in English and distributed widely. According to the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the most modern methods of printing and distributing books should be used to spread Krishna consciousness. So it means they're always up to date, but it's very important that this up to date means you're using the modern situation. You're not using the modern values or mentality. Does that make sense? There's a difference. Because it's just like, let's say, you can drive a car, but you can drive it for Krishna, right? And follow standards that would be, you know, appropriate for devotees. Or you can identify that, yeah, you got the cool car and you're, you know, the cool guy and, you know, you ride into your car and you know all the things about your car and that's all you ever talk about. And you know what I'm saying? You don't have to do that to use the car, right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So that means anything that's of this world then is a situation to be Krishna conscious in, right? It doesn't mean that you have to take on the attitude that others may take on when they use these things, when they're in those situations. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the important point. Yukta Vairagya just means it's been connected. But the connection is devotional activity, not the activity itself. You know what I'm saying? The modern activities, modern things, these are situations in which you perform devotional service. We can tell the difference?
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So that's important. So we see all the acharyas had no problem in working in the contemporary environment, whatever it is. Because they could say, oh, things are different. Rupa Goswami, you know, was called by Akbar, right, to come to Delhi and, how you say it? Explain the importance of the Jamuna. Because his other pandits couldn't really explain why the Jamuna was so important. Because he says, branch of the Ganga, why is it, you know, said to be more important than the Ganga? So no one could say, but everyone agreed that Rupa Goswami was the, you know, the greatest scholar. So then he wanted, you know, as the emperor, he wanted, you know, that he comes. But at the same time, is he didn't just, you know, demand that he comes. You know, he requested it because he's a great, you know, saintly person. Rupa Goswami says, I've taken a vow to stay in Vrindavan, not leave Vrindavan. So, therefore, if you can bring me down and take me back in the same day, then no problem, we'll come. Right? And at that time, they didn't exactly have the Agra Road. You know? means it was there. You can see the old stumps alongside. They're big, big. I don't know, maybe, I don't know, 20, 15, 20 feet high. Very, very big, nicely done brick, like pillars or markers that that's the road to go to Agra. So that was, you know, built at the Mughal times because, how do you say? So Akhmed of Shahjahan was Akbar's son, right? Yeah, and then Aurangzeb, bless his soul, is the was his son, right? Oh man. So, yeah. So then Akbar arranged to bring him down. Right? So here's Rupa Goswami. He's giving advice to Akbar and his court, enlightening them about the Jamuna. And they're arranging it on his terms. So they must have sent their fastest, you know, whatever, the chariot and horses or whatever they used, or sometimes these mules because they can run for a very long time. So that to bring him down and then take him back. And he's not fazed, right? He's not like, you know, suddenly now he's all, I'm moving with the big boys, so he gets distracted. And then he's sitting in Vrindavan, and probably from being seen in the court, then Man Singh, who was the, I think he was, may have been the king of Jaipur, but he was the general in charge of the, you know, Akbar's army, the imperial army. And he came to Vrindavan, and he wanted to do some service for Rupa Goswami. So he built the Govindaji temple. Like that took 20 years. You know, at that time when, you know, they had lots of people that would do this stuff. So you can, because everything is, everybody seen Govindaji?
Yes.
Yeah? No, you didn't see Govindaji. Yeah? You didn't see Govindaji.
I saw.
Oh, you saw. Yes.
But some devotees that say that Govindaji temple was made by Vishwakarma?
I haven't heard, unless he came, he was also there, but Man Singh gets the credit for, he financed it and made the arrangements, so if he had some arrangement with Vishwakarma, then cool. You know?
Because the devotees in Braj, they were saying that Govindaji was so happy with Rupa Goswami's service that he ordered Vishwakarma to come down and build the whole temple.
Okay, so maybe he did. But, you know, but it still would have looked like those people from here, you know. So maybe Vishwakarma empowered some people of that. But it's very, very special. The temple, very unique architecture. So, you know, from what I've seen, the nicest of the, you know, ancient temple architecture in India, like that, because it's all old traditional things like that. Very nice. Yeah, so it's there. So they want publishing. Why do they want publishing? Why does Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur want publishing?
So that other people can read and get benefit?
Yes, okay. And why is it important that you have a book that you can read? Yes.
Because it lasts forever.
It lasts forever. Okay. Yes. And anything else?
Also, you can hear one time and then you might remember it.
Yes. 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 So means you read the book and then you may forget something. You can read it again. Well, if it's only oral tradition where you've heard it from the spiritual master in the previous ages, then you'd hear it once and you could remember it for your whole life, right? So that's I guess they didn't have arguments like, no, but you said this. No, I never said that. No, I said, you know, those kind of things probably didn't happen in the previous ages, right? There, because everybody would remember, okay? Right? So the book means it's always there, and not only that, then you can read it, put it on the shelf, someone else can come along and read it, and this way then, you know, everybody can read it. So it's a very, for this age, then it's a very excellent method of establishing the philosophy, right? Because it's there, it's written, it's exact. Otherwise somebody may say, well, no, he said this, no, he said that. You know, now all it is you have exactly what's said. Now you can just argue over what does it mean, right? You know, so he's like something to. Yes. Okay. Yeah, so modern methods of printing and distributing. So, you know, top quality printing, the you know, layout, whatever it is that goes into to the printing, whatever is considered, you know, established or proper like that. And then distribution like that. However others distribute, try to use those methods because they're very effective in distributing millions and millions of books. No? Yes? Very good, possibly, maybe, yes, okay. Although many books of Vaishnava wisdom had already been perfectly presented by Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Jiva Goswami, the manuscripts now sat deteriorating in the Radha Damodar temple and other locations. And even the Gaudiya Math's printings of the Goswami works were not being widely distributed. One of Bhaktivedanta Swami's godbrothers asked him why he was spending so much time and effort trying to make a new commentary on the Bhagavatam, since so many great acharyas had already commented upon it. But in Bhaktivedanta Swami's mind, there was no question. His spiritual master had given him an order, right? Not only that, all the commentaries that were already there by the great acharyas were already in, they were in Sanskrit, like that. So Prabhupada would give whatever it is that they're saying, because I think there's like 10 commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Some on the whole Bhagavatam, some on only portions of the Bhagavatam. Like that, like I, some of, many of them are just on the 10th canto alone, or some of them are for the whole book. Like that. So then, so reading those, studying those, and then the commentaries of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that then you present in English, right? Giving, you know, your contemporary examples and things that would stressing more logic. Because traditionally someone who read Bhagavatam would already be a devotee. They'd already be, you know, committed practicing devotee. But here you have people who are not necessarily that, so it's being presented as the topmost work. Right, so it has to therefore, you know, logically, you know, make a presentation. Yes? No? What do you think? So it should or should not be logical?
Should be.
Sure. Why should it be logical? Give us a logical reason why it should be logical. No idea. You know what logical is? Ah, this is the problem. Logical means that it's presented according to intelligence, right? That it goes through a step-by-step presentation so that you understand everything about it. You know, the field, the background, definitions of what everything means, how they are connected together. You know, what is the result you can get from those connections and then that process for applying it, right? So it's very clearly presented as opposed to delineated, which would have caused more problems. That's the problem. We're reading Sahota Maharaj's books to an adult audience that speaks English. And so then the vocabulary changes. Because normally it would be, how you say? I remember when I go to Hungary, then if I came from India, because then they'd just be talking with locals and in the school and all that, then they could understand my English when they translate it. But if I had been to, you know, America or Australia first, then when I go there, they didn't understand the English like that. Yes? And you never understand English. You do? Okay, very good. We got an answer here. Yes, very good. Okay, so he's been given this order. That means there's something to be said there. That this will be presented. Because, yeah. Commercial publishers, however, were not interested in the 60-volume Bhagavatam series. And Bhaktivedanta Swami was not interested in anything less than a 60-volume parampara presentation of verses, synonyms, and purports based on the commentaries of the previous acharyas. But to publish such books, he would have to raise private donations and publish at his own expense. Radha Damodar Temple may have been the best place for writing Srimad Bhagavatam, but not for printing and publishing it. That he would have to go to Delhi, New Delhi, excuse me. Okay. Among his Delhi contacts, Bhaktivedanta Swami considered Hitsaran Sharma a likely helper, although when he had stayed at Mr. Sharma's home, Mr. Sharma had appreciated him more as a member of a genre than as an individual. At least Mr. Sharma was inclined to help sadhus, and he recognized Bhaktivedanta Swami as a genuine religious person. Right? So recognize him as a genre means he just sees him as a group, right? Sadhu, and so Hindus take care of sadhus, Hindus are nice to sadhus, you know, feed them, give them some donations, place to stay, hear some philosophy, like this and that. So he would consider, okay, he's a sadhu, so he's taking care. Not that specifically he likes Prabhupada and is inclined there or anything like that, right? It's the same like in Jhansi, right? They all appreciated, you know, sadhu, and here they have one living with them, right? And generally because in Jhansi probably was not known for having a lot of sadhus. You know, they're religious people, but not known as it's not like Varanasi or, you know, other places that may have a lot of sadhus. So they would listen, they would take care, but they wouldn't be, committed to doing something. Right? That sounds familiar? Not committed to doing something. You know, like washing pots or, you know, 4 o'clock service or... But we shouldn't be too harsh, you know, that would be unfair because we see that at, you know, 9:30 and 2:30, the boys are very enthusiastic, very committed to performing their service and everything like that. No? Yes? Not true? Yes, see, he says it's true, he confirms like that. So, taking prasadam is a very high priority. Very spontaneous, natural devotional inclination. So then, you know, that's probably why Gurukuls always do well, is because of that spontaneous interest to perform service to Krishna. Yes? Right? No? You don't like taking prasad? You do? Okay. Yeah? You like taking prasad? Sure? As much as making trouble? Tough one, okay. You like taking a shot? You? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, it's okay. Okay, very good. And what does the ringleader think? Yes, okay. Therefore, when Bhaktivedanta Swami approached him in his office, he was willing to help, considering it a religious duty to propagate Srimad Bhagavatam. So, at least if not the individual, at least then pious enough that you could catch them on something like that, do something because they're supposed to help the sadhus and everything like that. Yes? Hitsaran Sharma was qualified to help for two reasons. He was the secretary to J.D. Dalmia, a wealthy philanthropist, and he was the owner of a commercial printing works, Radha Press. According to Mr. Sharma, Mr. Dalmia would not directly give money to Bhaktivedanta Swami, even if his secretary suggested it. Mr. Sharma therefore advised Bhaktivedanta Swami to go to Gorakhpur and show his manuscript to Hanuman Prasad Podar, a religious publisher. Accepting this as good advice, Bhaktivedanta Swami journeyed to Gorakhpur, some 475 miles from Delhi. I wonder if this Hicharan Sharma was the guy I met, because we went to Gorakhpur once. And we met somebody connected with this Hanuman Prasad Poddar. It may have been him. Even such a trip as this constituted a financial strain. Bhaktivedanta Swami's daily ledger showed a balance of 130 rupees as of August 8, 1962, the day he started for Gorakhpur. By the time he reached Lucknow, he was down to 57 rupees. Travel from Lucknow to Gorakhpur cost another 6 rupees, and the rickshaw to Mr. Potter's home cost 80 paise. But the trip was well worth the cost. Bhaktivedanta Swami presented Mr. Poddar with his letter of introduction from Hicharan Sharma, and then showed him his manuscript. So he was the secretary to J.D. Dalmia. Okay, you know the connection. After briefly examining the manuscript, Mr. Poddar concluded it to be a highly developed work that should be supported. He agreed to send a donation of 4,000 rupees to the Dalmia Trust in Delhi to be used towards the publication of Sri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami's Srimad Bhagavatam. Indian printers do not always require full payment before they begin a job, provided they receive a substantial advance payment. After the job is printed and bound, a customer who has not made the complete payment takes a portion of books commensurate to what he has paid, and after selling those books, he uses his profit to buy more. Bhaktivedanta Swami estimated that printing one volume would cost 7,000 rupees, so he was 3,000 short. He raised a few hundred rupees more by going door to door throughout Delhi. Then he went back to Radha Prest and asked Hicharan Sharma to begin. Mr. Sharma agreed. Radha Prest had already produced much of the first two chapters when Bhaktivedanta Swami objected that the type was not large enough. He wanted 12-point type, but the Radha Prest had only 10-point. So Mr. Sharma agreed to take the work to another printer, Mr. Gautam Sharma of OK Press. In printing Bhaktivedanta Swami's Volume 1 of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, OK Press printed 4 book pages twice on a side of one sheet of paper, 20 by 26 inches. But before running the full 1,100 copies, they would print a proof, which Bhaktivedanta Swami would read. Then following the corrected proofs, the printers would correct the handset type and run a second proof, which Bhaktivedanta would also read. Usually he would also find errors on the second proof. If so, they would print a third. If he found no errors on the third proof, they would then print the final pages. At this pace, Bhaktivedanta Swami was able to order small quantities of paper as he could afford it, from 6 to 10 reams at a time, ordered 2 weeks in advance. I think a ream is 500 sheets, so that's a printing sheet. So like the kind of paper that you write on, well, it depends on which one you're writing on. You know, the little bigger paper, like they put in the printer? Right? That's called A4. That means it is 1/4 the size of a full piece of paper. So 4 of those papers put together makes one piece of paper, right? So an A5 means, let's see. No, it'll go. Because actually what it does is you have the full sheet, you fold it in half, that's one. No. Then when you fold it the second time, that's A4. When you fold it the third time, that's A5. Because A5 is half the size of an A4. Each time it's half. So that means there's 8 pages in an A5. Right? Yes? Like that. So like this, then Prabhupada would be doing this regular size. But it could also be from a different size piece of paper. I think there's 2 kinds of sizes. I don't remember them, but that they come out to make different shapes of books, like that. So that means 500, 6 to 10 reams, so that means, nearly, you know, how you say, 3,000 to 5,000 pieces of paper at once, and that will make then however many pages is on the book. Even as the volume was being printed, he was still writing the last chapters. When the proofs were ready at OK Press, he would pick up the proofs, return to his room at Chippewater, correct the proofs, and then return them. You understand? So the proof means it's not folded as pages. It's just printed on one big sheet, right? Then he'll take that, go through it, and then any mistakes, he'll mark that. Then they go back because it's done by hand these days. Now it's done on my computer and that. But before, they had little lead pieces that had the letter on it. And they had all these little boxes. So someone who would set type, they'd have this whole array of boxes in front of them. You know, each box is full of so many A's, so many B's, so many C's, like this. And so they would see the thing and just pull from the things, you know, and put it in and make the wording. And so then when they go through this, then if there's any mistake, then there's a way to take out exactly the one that's the problem and replace it. But in doing so, they may miss something in that. So sometimes it'd take like 2 or 3 times before they'd get it, or there wouldn't be any printing mistakes. Right? And then they would actually, once it's approved, then they would print the page. You know, so if you're doing, you're making 1,000 books, then they would print however many pages it would take to make the 1,000 books. Right? Like that. Yes. Then after that, he'll take it through here. But then after that, then the things are folded, and then they're put together. Then those are stacked in how the book goes, and then they're bound. Yeah, I mean the inside binding. Then they put it on a machine which cuts all the corners, like that, because it's all folded together, cuts all the corners. So then it's loose pages, and then after that, they put on the outside binding. Right, so it's a whole. Much more complicated than taking a palm leaf and then writing on it, right? So like that. Sometimes 14-year-old Kantvedi, who lived at the Chippewada temple with his parents, would carry the proofs back and forth for the Swami. But in the last months of 1962, Bhaktivedanta Swami usually made a daily walk to OK Press. His walk through the tight, crowded lanes of Chippewada soon led him to a road close to Jama Mosque, and that road led him into the noisy, heavily trafficked Chowri Bazaar. The neighborhood was a busy paper district, where laborers with ropes strapped across their shoulders pulled stout wooden carts, heavily loaded with stacks of paper, on small iron wheels. For 2 blocks, paper dealers were the only businesses. Hariram Gupta and Company, Rup Chand and Sons, Bengal Paper Mill Company Limited, Universal Traders, Janta Paper Mart, one after another, even down the side alleys. So many, because everybody's printing something, so here's all your paper. The neighborhood storefronts were colorful and disorderly. Pedestrian traffic was so hectic that for a person to dally even for a moment would cause a disruption. What's a dally? Space out. Yeah, I guess that would, yes.
Delay,
yeah, like that. Or just, you know, yeah. But, you know, it could be planned or it could be from being spaced out. But it means that if you're walking down the street, you have to know where you're going and just keep walking. Because if at any point you stop, then, you know, a million people, they walk over you, the guy's pulling those little carts, you know, like with all the paper on it, might run you over, you know, anything might be on those little lanes. Carts and rickshaws carried paper and other goods back and forth through the streets. Sometimes a laborer would jog past with a hefty stack of pages on his head, and the stack weighing down on either end. Traffic was swift, and an unmindful or slow-footed pedestrian, risk being struck by a load protruding from the head of a bearer or from a passing cart. Occasionally, a man would be squatting on the roadside, smashing chunks of coal into small pieces to sell. Tiny corner smoke shops drew small gatherings of customers for cigarettes or pawn. The shopkeeper would rapidly spread the pawn slices on a betel leaf, and the customer would walk off down the street chewing the pawn and spitting out red-stained saliva. Amidst this milieu, as the Chowri Bazaar commercial district blended into the tenement life, and children played in the hazardous streets, Bhaktivedanta Swami was a gentle-looking yet determined figure. What's a tenement? You take mints, 10 mints, and stack them up, and then you get a tenement.
Would that just mean it's becoming a residential
area? Yeah, it's a residential area, but it won't be specifically like individual houses like that. It'll be, you know, houses are all crowded together and stuff like that. Generally, it's like low-cost, very crowded housing. This year, tenements. Like that. Yes? No? What do you think? Confirmed. Whatever it was you're thinking. So. As he walked past the tenements, the tile sellers, the grain sellers, the sweet shops, and the printers, overhead would be electric wires, pigeons, and the clotheslines from the tenement balconies. Finally, he would come to OK Press, directly across from a small mosque. He would come, carrying the corrected proofs, to anxiously oversee the printing work. After 4 months, when the whole book had been printed, and the sheets were stacked on the floor of the press, Mr. Hitsaran Sharma arranged for the work to be moved to a bindery. What's a bindery?
Is it the binding books?
Where they bind the books. That's not where they take all these wild kids playing in the hazardous streets and tie them up or anything. Huh?
Either.
That, or it's a Chinese area where the ladies go to have their feet bound or something. No?
Not in New Delhi.
Not in New Delhi. Okay. Say you'd have to go to Beijing or something for that kind of bindery. Okay. The binding was done by an ancient operation, like that, mostly by hand, and it took another month. Bhaktivedanta Swami would come and observe the workers. A row of men sat in a small room, surrounded by stacks of printed paper. The first man would take one of the large printed sheets, rapidly fold it twice, and pass it to the next man, who performed the next operation. The pages would be folded, stitched, and collated. I'm not sure what collated is. Then put into a vise and hammered together before being trimmed on three sides with a handsaw and glued. Bit by bit, the book would be prepared for the final hard cover. What's a vice? All those nasty things that you like to do that you shouldn't be doing, but you really like doing them. That kind of vice they were putting the book into. No? No idea. Vices where you have, like, it can be made out of wood or metal or something, where you have two, you know, strong blocks of something. And then you have like a screw system that connects the two together. So as you screw it, then those two blocks of, you know, I would think in this case wood, then they come together closer. And then after that, then you unscrew it and then they move apart. So like that, when you're working with things that have to be held tightly in place so they don't move, then you use vices. Yeah? Like that. You also then the similar thing, generally like in wrestling or that, you have the vice grip, you know, where you have somebody all, how you say, bound up. Yes. In addition to his visits to OK Press and the Bindery, Bhaktivedanta Swami would also occasionally travel by bus across the Jamuna River to Mr. Hitsaran Sharma's Radha Press. The Radha Press was printing 1,000 dust jackets for the volume. What is a dust jacket?
It's a cover.
It's a cover. So it's not a, like a very, you know, well designed and cut like coat that you wear or something like that. And
also, we learned at the printer.
Not at the printer, but maybe they print logos on it and stuff, you know. Different kind of printer.
Screen printers.
You expect something so developed. They just said ancient over here. Yeah. Okay. So it means that the dust jacket is you have the bound book and then it's like that the cover that's on top of that. Because then the book cover can just be regular board, you know, on paper. I mean board and cloth. But then you have the dust jacket, which can have all kinds of colors and all kinds of printing, because the actual book will just say Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's it, nothing else. The other can have pictures and this and that and so many things. Yes? Plus, then the dust doesn't go on the book. Hence, dust jacket. Probably also, one wonder why it's not, like, say, a dust shirt or a, how you say, dust cloak, maybe, something. Right? Because there's no sleeves on it, so it could pass as a cloak. Like that. Yes? No? Or a dust chadar. No? Okay. Hitsaran Sharma. Swamiji was going hither and thither. He was getting whatever collections he could and depositing them. And he was always mixing with many persons, going hither and thither. With me, he was very fond that I should do everything as soon as possible. He had a great haste. He used to say, time is going, quick, do it. Right? So he said, he was very fond that I would do things quickly. Right? You know, like that. You know, it's like, Preeti Mushai is very fond that all you boys will behave yourself, go to class, do your service, you know, not kill each other. Like that. He would be annoyed with me also, and he would have me do his work first. But I was in the service of Dalmia, and I would tell him, your work has to be secondary for me. But he would say, now you have wasted my 2 days. What is this, Sharmaji? I am coming here. I told you in the morning to do this, and you have not done it even now. But I would reply, I have got no time during the day. Then he would say, then you have wasted my complete day. So he was very much pressing me. This was his temperament. The binding was reddish, the color of an earthen brick. What's an earthen brick? An earth brick. And what's an earth brick? That's kind of like some very far out, like New Age concept or something. The earth brick.
A brick made out of earth.
A brick made out of earth. Okay, so it's not some great, you know, how you say, mystic benefit for mankind in general or something. So therefore, the earth brick. Like that, or like you have the cosmic brick or the universal brick, you know, the earth brick. Okay, a brick made out of earth. Okay, see, so the color like this, so that was the color of the jacket. I mean, the binding itself. And was inlaid with gold lettering. What's inlaid?
Like pressed in.
Pressed in, as opposed to?
Just painted on.
Okay, you don't have outlaid or something. I think you have raised, and then you have outgraved, like that. That's especially a momraths, like that. They outgrave and stuff like that. No? Never met a momrath. Okay. Bhaktivedanta Swami had designed the dust jacket himself and he had commissioned a young Bengali artist named Salit to execute it. It was a wraparound picture of the entire spiritual and material manifestations. Dominating the front cover was a pink lotus, and within its whirl were Radha and Krishna and their pastimes in Vrindavan, along with Lord Chaitanya chanting and dancing with his associates. From Krishna's lotus planet emanated yellow rays of light, and in that effulgent were many spiritual planets, appearing like so many suns. Sitting within each planet was a different four-armed form of Narayana, each with his name lettered beneath the planet, Trivikram, Keshava, Purushottama, and so on. Within an oval at the bottom of the front cover, Mahavishnu was exhaling the material universes. On the inside cover, with Bhaktivedanta Swami's explanation of the cover illustration. When printing and binding were completed, there were 1,100 copies. Bhaktivedanta Swami could receive 100 copies, and the printer would keep the balance. From the sale of the 100, from the sale of the 100 copies, Bhaktivedanta Swami would continue to pay off his debt to the printer and binder. Then he would receive another supply of books. This would continue until he had finished paying his debt. His plan was then to publish a second volume from the profits of the first, and a third volume from the profits of the second. Right, so that would be how books publishing is done. You get the initial one, and then when he's selling that, that'll print the next one, until the whole thing's done. Then after that, you don't have to, if you're not printing more books, then that money could be used for other things, right? But otherwise, it would always go back into the books. Kant Vedi went to pick up the first 100 copies. He hired a man who put the books in large baskets, placed them on his hand truck, and then hauled them through the streets to the Chipiwada temple, where Bhaktivedanta Swami stacked them in his room on a bench. Bhaktivedanta Swami went out alone to sell his books and present them to important people. Dr. Radhakrishna, who gave him a personal audience, agreed to read the book and write his opinion. Hanuman Prasad Poddar was the first to write a favorable review. From the review, "It is a source of great pleasure for me that a long-cherished dream has materialized and is going to be materialized with this and the would-be publications. I thank the Lord that due to His grace, this publication could see the light." Bhaktivedanta Swami went to the major libraries, universities, and schools in Delhi, where the librarians found him, quote, calm and quiet, noble, polite, scholarly, with a specific glow in him. End quote. Traveling on foot, he visited school administration offices throughout Delhi and placed copies in more than 40 schools in the Delhi area. The Ministry of Education, which had previously denied him assistance, placed an order for 50 copies for selected university and institutional libraries throughout India. The ministry paid him 600 rupees plus packing and postage charges. And Bhaktivedanta Swami mailed the books to the designated libraries. The U.S. Embassy purchased 18 copies to be distributed in America through the Library of Congress. The institutional sales were brisk, but then sales slowed. As the only agent, Bhaktivedanta Swami was now spending hours just to sell a few copies. He was eager to print the second volume, yet until enough money came from the first, he could not print. In the meantime, he continued translating and writing purports. Writing so many volumes was a huge task that would take many years, and at his present rate, with sales so slow, he would not be able to complete the work in his lifetime. So,
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.